danger is stealing in as relapse hums above the din. It's hard to know if this will be the day.
Hello and welcome to episode 236 of the Thinking Poker Podcast from Owens Mills, Maryland. I am Andrew Brokus. I'll be joined shortly by Nate Mavis and also by our guest, Tapiwa Gwazi, which I may have slightly mispronounced. My apologies, Tapi. But if you play in the Maryland area, you probably know who Tapi is. He's certainly one of the regulars I most enjoy having at the table. And as it turns out, he's got a pretty compelling story as well. Born in Zimbabwe, lived in Scotland for a while before coming to the United States, and had some ups and downs on his road to becoming a successful professional poker player, but currently plays in some of the biggest games in the Maryland casinos, and just an all-around pleasure to talk to, so I hope that you'll enjoy our upcoming interview with Tapi. I do apologize to everyone. Do not have a strategy segment for this week, and that's a result of my playing in Maryland area casinos. I ended up, this is Thanksgiving weekend, that this episode is coming out the Monday after Thanksgiving, and hotels ended up being really cheap in the National Harbor area over Thanksgiving weekend, so I ended up going down there and putting in a lot of hours at National Harbor, which was fun and profitable, but resulted in not getting a strategy segment together for this week. So sorry about that, guys, but again, do have a pretty exciting interview coming up. And of course, if you are really serious about your poker strategy, Tournament Poker Edge is the place to go for that. That's where you can find loads of videos from me, a few videos from Nate as well, and of course loads of videos from lots of other pros, including many people who have been guests on this show. It's a great way to improve your tournament game, no matter what stakes you play, whether you play live or online, and you can sign up at www.tournamentpokeredge.com. Also want to remind everybody, with the holiday season approaching, that as you do your holiday shopping, there's an easy way for you to support the Thinking Poker Podcast. It won't cost you anything additional, but if you find yourself shopping on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, or we have affiliate links for a lot of the Amazon sites. And so if you use our affiliate links, Nate and I will get a little bit of a kickback from that. It won't cost you anything additional. And in order to do that, you just go to thinkingpoker.net, look for the Support the Podcast tab, and then you can choose whether you're Amazon.com or Amazon.fr, Amazon.uk, or you know, whichever one of those is applicable for you. And again, it doesn't cost you anything additional, but if you use one of those links before you do your shopping, all you have to do is shop as usual after you click one of those links, and that'll help us out a little bit. So thanks for that. Hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving if you are Americans who celebrate that sort of thing, and I hope that you'll enjoy our interview with Tapi. So as I said, you know, we don't generally do a whole lot of an introduction for these things anyway, but I don't even know that I would know that much to say in terms of how to introduce you. I mean, I've always enjoyed talking to you at the poker tables, and partly I was just sort of like, you know, somehow this kid from Zimbabwe ended up sitting on my left in a 5-10 game at Maryland Live. I feel like there has right. to be a story there.
yeah, there's definitely a long story. Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, I guess we can go back to like middle school. That's when I learned how to play. And so we were playing $5 home games with friends. We were doing a lot of tournaments. It was $5 tournaments. And I don't even remember how I got the money to get in the tournaments, because I didn't have a job. I didn't, you know, my parents didn't really give me money. So I just would, you know, borrow from friends and then play in these tournaments, and I loved it. Like, I loved everything about it. I was actually like like a losing player, like a big time losing player at the time. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just really enjoyed it for whatever reason.
Do you remember how it even like came onto your radar?
Yeah, well, just like my friend just said, hey, like, you know, like let me play, let's play a poker game. And I didn't even know the rules. Like the first turn of the first time I went to play with these guys, I didn't even really know the rules. I didn't know what a big blind was. I didn't know what a small blind was. So they were explaining the rules to me as I was playing in this game.
And somehow you were losing.
Somehow I was losing. Yeah, exactly. Somehow I was the worst player at the table. But for whatever reason, I just really enjoyed it. And I was the one trying to get people to play. Like, I was the one trying to get everybody to play. And I was, of course, like, losing all the time. But I just really just enjoyed the game. I enjoyed, enjoyed, like, the bluffing. I enjoyed the, I didn't really know much about the strategy part of it. I wasn't really sure if there was any skill involved at this time. Like I just enjoyed playing it. And then that just kind of went up until so that was in middle school in Texas. And then me and my dad, we moved to Missouri, and then I went to high school in Missouri, and there was, we started play, I found some group of guys that played higher, and we started playing like cash games, so higher stakes, and like I think it was like 50 cent a dollar, 25 cent, 50 cent. I had a job at this time, I was working at Arby's, and just again, still losing, still enjoying it. It's still, I was playing a little bit on Full Tilt, wasn't doing like super great.
When you're still in high school, you're playing on Full Tilt.
Yeah, still in high school. I think I created my Full Tilt account at like 14 years old or something like that, 14 or 15. And then, so I'm like depositing money and losing it. And then I think it kind of dawned on me to like start studying strategy like once I got into college. So I went to a community college, Moberly Community College in Missouri, and then I started listening to some motivational speakers. I started listening to Jim Rohn and Brian Tracy, and they're talking about reading and like, you know, and studying, you know, and learning skills, and it just kind of sort of dawned on me like, wow, there's actually probably like poker strategy, like there's probably like, you know, there's probably a lot of books on the subject, and I found out that there is a lot of books on the subject. So I just started reading all that I could, and just devouring a lot of information.
And so what year is this that you're, this you're
is,
reading these
this
books?
Is probably like 2007. I graduated high school in 2009, so 2010.
Okay.
I'm starting to read some poker books. I'm starting to play some bar games, like, you know, there was a bar that was pretty popular in my area, and like they would have a tournament, like a $20 tournament, and then they would have a 50 cent a dollar cash game after that. So I started school really early because I started school in Zimbabwe, and then so it's a different school system. So when I was 17 years old, I graduated high school, right after I turned 17, I graduated high school. So I was 17 at this time, and then once I had a job working at Sonic, and basically I worked that job for like maybe a couple months. I had like $2,000 saved up. My dad left Missouri to go to he went to here in Virginia. He moved to Virginia like early 2010, and then he just like left me in Maryland. I was like, hey dad, like, you can just go to Virginia. I'm gonna work, you know, at Sonic, and you know, I'm gonna try to save up to go to college. And then I just played poker. Like, I ended up just quitting that job at Sonic, and I was just playing that bar game, the home game at the bar. And then that was my first sort of experience at trying to be a professional poker player.
And was that like, were you actually making money that was competitive with what you were making at Sonic, or was that just like delusional on your part?
It was very delusional. I didn't really I didn't really know like what to expect as far as how much money I was going to make and everything. I think it only lasted maybe like 2 months maybe two and a half months, and then like I basically went broke. So it was just kind of stupid, but it was a good learning experience. I went to, I was like, hey dad, like I need to come to Virginia and live with you. And so he let me come in and live with him, and then so I worked a canvassing job. I was looking at for jobs here in the area, and there was a lot of canvassing jobs at the time where basically you're canvassing for political campaigns. So you're knocking on doors and you're trying to get someone elected. So that was pretty popular at that time. And so I applied for that, got the job, and so I did that for about maybe 6 months until the election. And so I saved up about $2,000, and I was 18 at this time. And so I went to Turning Stone Casino one weekend, and I was just planning on staying that weekend, and I was doing well. I just decided I was staying at a Red Roof Inn, probably about 2 miles away from Turning Stone Casino. And then I just decided, well, like, let me just stay here. Like, let me just, I basically lived in that hotel for like maybe 4 months. I was taking a taxi from the hotel to Turning Stone Casino every day, and just playing 1-2. And then, I mean, I played a little bit of 2-5, but not much. I did that for about, 3-4 months until, again, I went broke. Then I moved back again to Virginia, and then when I was over there, though, I met somebody. His name was Chris. He was like, we became really good friends, and he decided, hey, he called me and he said, hey, you know what? I'm like planning on playing poker in Florida. And so I was like, all right, well, that's cool. And he's like, hey, you know what? You want to stay with me? You want to live with me? We'll just play poker at Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Florida. I was like, wow, that's a great idea. And then he said he was going to stake me. I was like, okay, awesome. Like, not going to have any risk. I only had about maybe $1,500 in my name. And so at this time, because I had worked a little bit before he made that call, he called me. And then I was like, all right, wow, yeah, okay. It seems like a no-brainer. So we went to, I was at 19 at this time. We went to Florida, and I played for him one session, and I lost $800. And then he was like, maybe we shouldn't stake you. Like, I'm going to use it by myself for now. Like, and so I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. So I had to play by myself 1-2.
Is 19 old enough that you could play legally in the casino there?
Yes. Yeah, so it's an Indian reservation sort of thing. So yeah, when you only have to be 18 to play there. So I was just playing by myself, playing 1-2, and then eventually I moved up to 2-5, and so this lasted probably about like 6-7 months. And I loved it. I loved every bit of Florida. I mean, the rain kind of sucked, but like I loved the weather. We lived right next to the beach, right next to Hollywood Beach. Nice. It was like, it was awesome. I would run next to the beach every day. So it was definitely a great experience. And then, of course, right, like we go broke. So after that, I come back to Virginia, and like I'm so worried because my dad, I'm worried that my dad's not gonna let me come back. I've sort of put him through a lot at this point. Obviously my dad, he has a PhD, my mom has a master's. I dropped out of college with basically no direction. At the point I dropped out of college, it wasn't to play poker, it wasn't to do anything. It was just I didn't know what I wanted to do, and so I dropped out like when I was 17, and I was just worried that he might say, hey, like, you just gotta figure it out on your own and not let me come back in. And luckily for me, there was like a visitor over that day that I was there, that day that I just was coming back, so he was in a good mood. And so he like let me, because he was furious. Like, he was really bad on the phone. Like, once I told him sort of like what happened, he was like, you're definitely going to college next semester. I was like, okay, dad, like, I'm going to college next semester, like, everything, And so, started working at Panda Express. And I worked probably about a year and a half at Panda Express, just trying to, I was you know, making money, but I was also really interested in business at this time. So I was like creating some websites, and I was, you know, trying to make some money, and you know, those projects where it didn't work out. And then I was also trying to make money to play poker. I was playing at some home games, and there's a lot of
Did you actually start back at college like he was pushing you to do?
No. I didn't. Yeah. When that day kind of came where I was like, hey, we got to sign up for college. I don't know what excuse I gave, but everything was like, oh, maybe next semester, you know, I don't know what I want to, you know, do yet. So sort of just kept pushing it back. And then I had like maybe probably about $2,500 to my name, and then my little brother, actually, I have two brothers, but my little brother, he was so I was 21 at this time, he was 19, and he basically told me, hey, like, if you want to play poker for a living, just do it, you know. I was like, deal, but I don't have that much money. I've already went broke several times before. Like, if I do it again, like, there's no way that's gonna be back, you know. But he was like, just do it, like, you'll be just fine, like, you know, you're working hard, like, you're reading the books, like, you'll be fine. And I just made the leap. Like, I had to so I found a place on I had to move out because I knew I couldn't play poker living with, you know, with my dad. So I had to move out. And so I found a place where I was renting a room, $600 a month. Then I had to pay $600 down payment, like a security deposit.
Right.
And so basically, yeah, I had like $1,900 to my name. And then I was still working at Pan Express, but part-time. And then I decided, well, you know what? Yeah, like, let me just start playing poker at Maryland Live. And I was playing 1-2, and I had a couple sessions at 1-2. I was up and down, and I just, like, one day I made a really bad bluff, and I was kind of on tilt, actually. Like, I was on tilt because I made this really bad bluff at 1-2. I was like, why did I do that? That was so stupid. And then I was like, you know what? Let me just go play 2-5. And I had probably $2,000, and I was like, screw it, like, let me just play 2-5. And it just, like, that day I ended up making like $1,500 at 2-5. I was like, it was so good, you know. I was so lucky, really. I was really lucky that you know, that happened. And then so I started doing well at 2-5. You know, I had a couple of bad days, but then, you know, for the most part, like, that the first 2 months essentially ran pretty well, and then probably made like $8,000 in that first 2 months. And then I was like, well, you know what, like, let me quit at Pan Express now. And so I quit Pan Express, then I just started, yeah, I was just like playing poker. Some time in there, I was also teaching chess, like, part-time as well. I used to teach chess, like, I would teach after school classes, and so it'd be 1 hour a day. I would you know, teach chess, and I'd get paid like $50 for the class. So it'd be like a little extra $200, you know, a week, you know, doing that. So that's I was doing that as well as the Pan Express. And then, you know, within 2 months of playing poker, I was just doing playing poker at 2-5 at Maryland Live. And so I did that for a couple years, and then MGM opened up, and then I moved closer to MGM about 3 months ago in June, and I've just been playing at MGM ever since, playing just mostly 5-10, occasionally playing 10-25, and things have been going really well. I bought a condo about 3 months ago. So, you know, trying to invest and, you know, trying to use my money to so that I can have some passive income, so I don't have to play poker. I'm also trying to create a digital marketing, agency. So that's another project that I'm working on as well. So trying to, do other things other than poker as well. But poker has been going pretty well for me, you know, luckily. So
Yeah, I mean, it seems like other than some of the decisions, you know, sort of like playing games that you weren't really bankrolled for, or, you know, going pro when you didn't really have a bankroll or whatever. I mean, it seems like you must generally be pretty cautious with money if you're like able to consistently be saving up like $2,000 while working at fast food type jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't like, you know, it was so easy to spend money, you know, when you work in a mall, you know, there's so many temptations, you know, like just right there in front of you. But yeah, I was very cautious with my money. I was not spending money at all. Like I was just saving. And the only thing I bought was books. I mean, I probably have over 400 books on my Kindle of just business, poker, life. You know, self-help stuff, just like the only things I would buy at that time was just basically books, and that's it really.
Because I could easily imagine that story going, you know, I played 2-5 for 2 months, I made $8,000, I was convinced that I was now like the best 2-5 player in the world, I bought a car, I bought this, I assumed I was going to be making, you know, $5,000 a month consistently for, you know, it didn't seem like you went that route.
No. Luckily for me, I was very humble. You know, I did not go that route at all. I didn't have a car at this time. That's another story. So I didn't have a car. So I took the bus every day. I would take the 201 bus from Shady Grove Metro Station. So I would take the bus to the metro station. Then there's a bus that goes to Maryland Live. It takes about an hour. So it would be about like 2 hours commute to Maryland Live and then 2 hours back. And basically every day. Now, what I would do a lot of times is I would take the bus. Once I stopped like working at Pan Express, I was just teaching chess. So I teach chess, and so my chess teaching job would be about 3:30 p.m. So I would teach chess at 3:30 p.m. I would finish that, and so I'd like about 5, and then I would head to Maryland Live. So like it would take me about 2 hours to get to Maryland Live. So I'd be there at 7 p.m. And then I'd play, and then the 201 bus stops running at like 11 p.m. and then it starts running again at 5 a.m. So basically, I'd basically force myself to play to 5 a.m. so I would then catch that 201 bus at 5 a.m. to the metro station. So I'd be like sleeping on the bus. You know, I remember sleeping on the bus like all the time. I'd be exhausted, you know, a lot of times. And then I'd just, you know, a lot of times, sometimes I'd miss my stop. And then I would, you know, get on the train, and then I would, get home and then just crash. And I'd wake up at like 2 p.m. and then I'd get ready to go back to do the chess job. So it was tough not having a car and just having like, you know, 4 hour commute basically to and from work.
I guess it's no wonder you're spending all this money on books then.
Yeah. I'm spending a ton of money on books and I had to make it work, you know. I had to make sure that, you know, that when I'm there, I'm doing well. Because
I was thinking in terms of giving yourself something to do on the bus, but yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I needed something to do on the bus, like, because obviously it's boring. Like, you only need something to do when you're going there. When you're going back, it's pretty, you know, you're just sleeping. Or, yeah, I mean, it's you're really tired at that point. So, I remember I would play like long, long sessions and just like really just sleep on the bus. And that's typically how that went for a while. And then, you know, eventually, like way later down the road, then I, you know, bought a car. And I'm not a fancy one at that either. Like, I really don't like spending money.
Like a fancy car kind of guy.
Yeah, no. I'm very, you know, I just need something to get me to and from. That's it, you know. Nothing special. So that's how that went, so.
Well, I want to pick up the poker thread again in a second, but you know, you started off. You're in middle school in Texas. If you wouldn't mind, I mean, can we just go back to moving? I guess from Zimbabwe, ending up in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. So my dad, he got a job here in Texas, working for Texas A&M, doing. So he's a forest scientist, and so he was actually here though, like maybe 6 months, and then we joined him here. So he was here for a while, then you know, my mom and us, we were in Edinburgh, Scotland. So I lived in Scotland from 2 years old to 8 years old.
You were born in Zimbabwe, but didn't really have much memory of it.
Yeah, so I didn't really remember much of it. I was born in Zimbabwe, lived there for 2 years, went to Scotland, lived there for about 7 years. I did go back to Zimbabwe when I was 9 years old for like 9 months, so I remember that part of it. But then we went back to Scotland, and then we went to Texas.
How did you like Scotland? I've heard Edinburgh is sort of a beautiful but depressing place.
My memories of it was I liked it a lot. We played a lot of soccer. I remember playing a lot of soccer. I remember a lot of snowball fights. I remember having a lot of fun. My mom and dad, they didn't like it though. They said it was too cold, and you know, they didn't really like it very much. but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Definitely more than what I remember of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe was really tough. Like the school, like I since I lived in Scotland, we were, you know, my mom didn't want us to, so when I was 2 years old, we learned how to speak Shona, my mom didn't want us to struggle to speak English, so she just talked to us in English. So I sort of forgot how to speak Shona, which is the language of Zimbabwe. And then when I went back to Zimbabwe at 9 years old, I was struggling at school. Like, I was in the school system, and, like, the teacher would speak in Shona, and I would sort of just have to, like, to ask my, like, classmates, like, what was she saying, you know? Like, I just felt lost. Like, I just felt really lost. It was a really tough system. Like, you can't do a lot of things, otherwise, like, I mean, they'll like, the teacher will like beat you up, like, I mean, seriously, like, actually, like, grab a stick and like actually like hit you, like, so it's they don't mess around in Zimbabwe. So yeah, when I came over here and like you see kids acting up, it's like, wow, like that just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen over there. Like it was really tough and very strict, very very strict and environment, you know. So
was that the biggest culture shock for you coming to the U.S. was badly behaved kids?
Well, that and I mean, just yeah, people, how they talk to their parents, how they, like, it's just so different, you know. Over there, you have to be very very respectful to your elders, even not just your parents, just your, anybody who's older than you. You have to be very respectful, and it's just a very different, you know, culture. And then so it's funny, I I've been living here about 15 years, and then when I went back to Zimbabwe maybe 3 years ago, yeah, it's just so different, you know. It's you go back and you're like, wow, you know, I mean, people are so happy with so little. Here, they're like, people just, they have so much, and they're you know, miserable, and they're not happy, and so yeah, like everything is just is very very different, you know. People behave in general is just different, you know.
Yeah, I had a friend who, I mean, she grew up in the U.S., but she lived for 2 years in Tanzania, and when she came back to the U.S., she said it was just really jarring, just all the kind of, like, I guess commercialism, or just the amount of, like, stuff that everybody had, and how much it was kind of, like, frequently being pushed. I mean, and she was a native of that culture, of the U.S. culture, mm-hmm. but still, like, after 2 years being elsewhere, it really struck her coming back to it, how dramatic that was.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's just so different. Yeah, I mean, Americans.
And then you're working in a shopping mall.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people are buying so much stuff they don't need. It's crazy. You know, over there they have basically just the essentials. You know, and they're fine. Like, they're, you know, and it's just, it's amazing how, to me, you know, how, because I, you know, I'm in America, you're just so I'm so driven to, like, to make more money and to just keep going up and up the you know, to be successful and you know, want to be a millionaire, and, you know, and realize the quote-unquote American dream. Over there, they yeah, like, a lot of people are just very content to just yeah, to I guess to have not that much, or, you know, at least in our eyes, not that much. It is sort of depressing sometimes, because they are just, they feel they have no control over their circumstances, you know, like the government over there is really bad. Like there's not a lot of opportunities for people. So it's, it's kind of tough for people to get ahead. And so they just, it's kind of depressing, because you want to help them. You want to see them do better and better and better, but it's kind of a, That was kind of a shock to me, just how tough it is over there, and how blessed we are over here. You know?
Can I jump in? This is not a current event show, right?
Right.
However, we do have a dude from Zimbabwe on today, and Zimbabwe is on the front page of every respectable newspaper, anywhere. Do you have anything? Did you have any sort of thoughts about what's going on there?
So, I mean, it's great that Mugabe is not in power now. I mean, Mugabe has been in power for 37 years or so. Like, he's done a lot of really bad things, you know, has a lot of really old ideas of, and that they just haven't worked. So it's great that there's going to be some, we hope that there's going to be change, you know, but we don't know that. You know, we don't know if the next guy that's going to come into power is going to be better or worse. That's sort of what I'm really curious to see. But everybody's excited. I have several, you know, a lot of Zimbabwean friends here in the States. You know, a lot of people back home that are, you know, everybody's excited that it's going to be somebody new in power. You know, he's been in power way too long, and we definitely need somebody new. So that's good. So
it's interesting, and I'm glad to hear that perspective. I think I get a little bit of that sense from what I read, but more than that, I get the sort of standard, it's 2017, everything's changing, and like Mugabe, like, you know, I remember being in high school and writing Mugabe down on tests and things like that. It's like, it feels so much like the status quo, and it's never been kind of a real part of my life. And I think Western media is sort of missing the point that there's reason to think this is a very good thing.
Absolutely. I think that it's a great thing for the country, I think. But the problem is, there's so many problems already right now. Whoever is going to come in has the economy's in shambles. Like, there's just so many problems. So I don't know if the next person is going to be able to do a great job. I don't know what we can sort of expect from that next person, whoever takes power. So they have a lot on their hands. There's, you know, cash shortages. There's an employment crisis. I've read there that there are only 30% of people, less than 30% of people have a job in Zimbabwe. So I mean, over 70% of the population don't have a job. I mean, that's a problem, you know. That's a huge problem. So, you know, how the next president can, you know, he needs to create new jobs, and he needs to get the economy going. So I don't know how he's going to do that, but hopefully somebody can do that, because that'd be great, you know. Mm-hmm.
This reminds me, and I hope I wasn't out of line, because I think this is maybe only the second or third thing I ever said to you the first night that I met you. I just kind of had this vision of, like, your parents working so hard to take you out of Zimbabwe and bring you to a place where you might have more opportunity, and they're saying to you, oh, you can, you know, here in America, you can be anything you want to be, and you're like, great, I choose professional poker player. Like, yeah. Oh, that is not what we had in mind.
No, it's definitely not what they had in mind. I remember as a kid, my mom used to always tell me, hey, I want you to be a doctor, you know, like, that was so drilled in me and my brother's head, like, you know, I want you to be a doctor when you grow up. I need you to take care of me when I get old, you know. But, you know, my parents did work very, very hard. My dad used to work on the farm. And like a couple years ago, whenever I went, like 3 years ago, I saw the farm he used to work on. I saw the little, you know, he used to live in a little, basically a little hut, you know, him and his brother, his sister. I think he had two brothers and two sisters, and mom and dad. Like, I mean, it was very rural, very like it was tough. You know, I can only imagine, you know, being a kid working on the farm. You know, I mean, he's working the farm when he's like 10 years old, you know, and you know, having to do that work and also go to school and you know, do all those other obligations. I mean, it's a very, very tough situation, you know, and having to walk to school. I mean, they didn't have cars, you know, so they had to walk to school every day. I mean, it's so yeah, we have it really, really easy. You know, we have it just so easy compared to that. My mom, yeah, she had it really tough as well. Had to care for her parents and then you know, had to do school as well, and had to do when also work a job, and so yeah, I've been very lucky. I'm very happy that they came over here to the States and gave us that opportunity to be whatever we want to be. I mean, and you know, I've chose professional poker player. My little brother, he wants to be a writer, so we both kind of went different directions than they expected, but yeah. You know, but they are proud of us. They are.
I was gonna say, I know you mentioned your father being skeptical, which is understandable given that you had kind of tried and failed a few times. You know,
exactly.
I can understand why he would say, you know, maybe you should be doing something different.
Exactly.
But I mean, it seems like ultimately he didn't like forbid you from doing it or.
No. And I mean, they've come around a lot, you know, a lot now that, you know, once they started seeing that I was actually successful at it and I was doing well at it, they were 100% on board. And, you know, they're happy for me that I found something that, you know, I enjoy and that I'm good at. And, you know, my dad does still say every now and then, "Hey, Tuffy, you know, do you want to go to college?" You know, he still mentions college every now and then, but you know, he knows that I'm probably not going to go to college, and I'm just going to focus on poker and then do business as well. I want to ultimately get into business and really, you know, and have that be the thing that I do in the next 5 years. I want to be doing business full time.
What is the?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. How's the digital marketing? How's that going?
So it's going well. So I've just incorporated. It's called a convertible marketing. Convertible Marketing LLC. Like that's the name. Like that's the business name. I've incorporated it as LLC. I've made it called Convertible Marketing because we create digital campaigns that convert well. And convertible is sort of sounds like convertible, like a car, like the convertible car. And so basically it's going to have like a car theme to the website and a lot of the things that we're doing, just so that we are kind of a little bit different. You know, we're going to be we're doing Google AdWords and Facebook marketing for small businesses. And so I just hired my first employee. So we're, you know, I'm getting the ball rolling, you know, just sort of getting started with it. I still need to get a website done and designed and developed, but you know, things are in the works. Hopefully in the next couple of years that's doing well and I can, you know, focus on that. But for now, I need to still be playing poker so I can, you know, make money to market that. And I'm going to be doing a lot of going to a lot of networking events and promoting that and that business. So
I imagine a lot of what you learned at poker is relevant to that because it's sort of a value betting game, right? Digital marketing. It's like you want to help your clients buy something like an ad for $1 and then have that be worth more than $1 to them.
Exactly.
And do you find that the poker lessons are relevant to that?
Absolutely. So my background is in chess. A long time ago, when I was in sixth grade, I learned how to play chess, and I got pretty good. And when I was 14, I was like number 14. Like I was in like the 21st. I was like top 20 14-year-olds in the country. I was eighth grade state champion in Texas. I was pretty good at chess, and so that helped me in the poker, just kind of understanding, you know, strategy and logic, and then I, you know, got, you know, I was pretty good at math, so that helped me as well. So I think that background will help me with, you know, doing marketing, because I can just, you know, be very strategic with how we do run our campaigns, and making sure, of course, that our $1, every $1 that our clients are spending, they're getting, you know, a good return on investment, $1.50 back, so that they're getting you know, more clients, and they're making money. So I think that chess and poker is going to help me with our marketing, the marketing business.
Yeah. You miss chess?
You know, I miss it. I really do enjoy playing chess. I don't really get to play much nowadays, just because I'm really busy with poker. I play a lot of poker. You know, I play over 60 hours a week. So I play a lot. But I would like to play tournaments. Tournaments are the really fun, you know. I really, really enjoy the, you know, the competition. I enjoy traveling. I enjoy, you know, staying in hotel rooms and playing chess. I want to get back into it, because I do want to become a grandmaster one day. Like I really do. But it is something that I'm gonna have to kind of put on the back burner for now, until I can, you know, have, you know, a successful business, at least have it going somewhat, and then I can sort of cut down on poker, and then maybe have that be, you know, a nice hobby. Like it you know, that'd be a nice you know, thing to just, you know, just something to do that'd be really fun and exciting to do. But I need to wait until things are better, like I have a somewhat a successful business before that. So
sure.
Yeah.
How did you choose digital marketing specifically as the kind of like the space that you wanted to explore with your business?
You know, so I've done a lot of reading in the digital marketing. Like I was saying before, I have like over 400 books Kindle on my Kindle, 400 Kindle books. So I really enjoy reading. I've done a lot of reading about Facebook marketing and Google AdWords and, you know, Instagram, all this stuff, and I just thought, like, I'm just really interested in it, you know. It's just really interested in like creating campaigns and ads and marketing. I don't watch much TV, but whenever I watch TV, I'm interested in the ads, you know. I'm interested in just how yeah, it's so funny, but I'm interested in like how, you know, like the creativity, like how do they come up with that? Like, it's, you know, it's really creative. Like, I enjoy looking at watching a good ad. Like, it's to me it's fun. Like, so like I've always been like that. I've been having this idea of creating a digital marketing agency for a long time. I mean, probably like a little over a year, but I've just kind of been putting it off and playing a lot of poker. Just was like, let me just play poker. But, you know, I decided, you know, I really want to do this. And because, yeah, ultimately I want to be like doing speaking engagements on like digital marketing. I want to be, I would love to just, yeah, like travel and talk about marketing, business, you know, maybe even be like a motivational speaker. Like, that'd be great. Like, I would love that. That's where I sort of see myself heading. And then, you know, maybe in the near future. So that's kind of what I want to do.
Of the books that you've read, and I guess I'm curious about all the different subjects that you've mentioned, if you can pick out a couple titles for each, you know, what were some of the books that had the biggest influence on you?
There's an author called Perry Marshall, and he has a really good book on Google AdWords. like I guess it's probably like mastering Google AdWords or something like that. That was really, really good. And just I love how he talked about marketing and how he talked about how, yeah, like it's you don't do marketing to be flashy or to, you know, you do it to make money. And I just sort of love how he sort of explains like Google AdWords and just being very ruthless as far as like, yeah, if this ad doesn't, you know, meet the but if it's not making money, then you just, you know, you just test out a lot of different things. And I like that idea of just doing marketing where you're testing out a lot of different things and you're just seeing which one, you know, is the best. I love creativity. I love being creative. I love doing new things. So that's sort of what really sort of got me more excited about marketing. Sometimes, yeah, I'm creative at the poker table, a little bit too creative. Yeah, sometimes that gets me in trouble. But, you know, but I think with marketing, you know, being really creative can actually would be a good thing. So I'm really, you know, interested to get started in doing that.
I think just since you mentioned that the creativity in poker, and we'll come back to books in a second, but I mean, I think obviously I know that feeling of like, oh, that was a little too creative, you know? But,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, I do think that the willingness to be creative is pretty important for getting better, even though it does, you know, certainly you can and will lead to mistakes. At the same time, like, you've kind of got to be willing to try new things, including things that you're not sure are going to work, or else there's really going to be a pretty low ceiling on how good you can get.
Exactly. That's very, very true. And so, yeah, I've been definitely, you know, once I started playing 5/10 and, you know, higher, I've been trying to be more creative and realizing that if you're not creative and you just play a very ABC style, I mean, you're just going to get beat. I mean, you know, people are going to figure you out. And I mean, the competition is pretty good. I mean, the you know, there's definitely a lot of good players that I'm playing with on a daily basis. So I'm sort of forced to be, you know, somewhat creative and do a lot of different things. And so, but which is good. I like that, you know. Whenever I started playing chess, I was in sixth grade, and I played like one or two local tournaments. I used to live in College Station, Texas, so it's not a really big chess town. So we'd have like small local tournaments, but the real tournaments were in Dallas. Okay, so the Dallas Chess Club is probably one of the best chess clubs in the country. I would go there every weekend, and my mom we'd play a tournament in Dallas at the Dallas Chess Club, and I would lose every game. I would literally lose every game for like several weeks in a row, but we would analyze the game. I would analyze the game with the person that I played with, and I would just learn from them. You know, I would just sort of learn, you know, what they were thinking, and I would like just ask them so many questions about, you know, what were they thinking, why would they make this move, you know, what are they trying to do, like what was their plan after that. And then after that, like, you know, probably maybe 2 or 3 months later, I started beating some of those guys that were beating me, you know, because you're playing a lot of the same guys. And so you know, I'm sort of used to having to, you know, like playing against really good competition, and again being creative and just sort of pushing myself to just continually get better. So that sort of experience helped me, because I was playing against people in the Dallas Chess Club, and that, like, within several months, I was one of the best chess players in the eighth grade level. You know, in Texas, I won this Texas State Championship. So that was that helped out a lot with just you know, beating, you know, 5/10. So let me get back to the books.
I
kind of went off on a tangent there. There's a book about content marketing. It's by Joe Pelucci, that really talks about how, yeah, I enjoy, you know, reading good content. Like, I just enjoy reading, you know, I enjoy learning, so I enjoy reading good content that I can learn from. And so, yeah, how he talks about like creating content and how it's supposed to be informative and help people be entertaining and I sort of really enjoyed that and how he talks about that's how you're supposed to get customers instead of like doing sales. I've done some sales jobs briefly and I was just never really good at sales. You know, it was just never something that's, you know, I'm naturally good at. But how he was talking about, you know, you sort of you use content, you teach people, and that's sort of how you bring them into your sphere and you know, make them want to learn from you. Like that is just a much better approach. And I figure, oh, I could do that. Like that I could do, you know, I could learn about, digital marketing, and then I can write about it, what my knowledge is, and then have people sort of say, hey, you know, if they like it, they could say, hey, you know, why don't you do digital, you know, can you do digital marketing for me? You know, can you market my business? So, like just reading some of those books just opened my eyes as to the, to just learn about this opportunity. Like this, like it's definitely something that I can do. I don't have to have a degree. I don't have to, you know, be really good at sales. I just need to do great work for people. I just need to go out there and talk to small business owners and help them out and do marketing for them that I've learned how to do, and then you know, they provide a testimonial for me, and then, you know, that leads to another another client and another client and another client. So that's really the crux of it. Like, and I mean, obviously there's many other books that I've learned from, but and also a lot of YouTube videos of just learning about just people that are doing this, people that have digital marketing agencies and how they're doing really, really well with it and how they're going about doing it. It's just it seems really possible for this to do that I'll do really well with it. So it's like, figure why not.
What about poker? What were some of the books or resources that were most helpful to you there?
So poker, I would say, I'm trying to think what would be like the best one. I read a lot of poker books. Professional Poker by Ed Miller and Sonny. do you know the one that I'm talking about?
Yeah, Professional No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah, Professional No Limit Hold'em. Yeah, so that was a really good book for me. And they also have another one like Small Stakes No Limit Hold'em, mm-hmm. that I thought was really good as well. But I really, really learned a lot from Bart Hansen's stuff. I used to be a subscriber to Crest Live Poker, and I mean that probably helped me the most, I would say, as far as live poker. And then, and well, at least for 2/5, and then for 5/10, I did a lot of Run It Once. I had a Run It Once subscription, and watched a lot of videos there. Did some Flopzilla work, and also I learned a lot from Matthew Janda. Matthew Janda, not only did I read his two books that he has, but also I watched some of his card runner videos back in the day. And he did a lot of Flopzilla analysis, and I would do some work with that. And that helped me to sort of figure out ranges and, you know, how to play different hands in my range based on what I think about his range. So that, I would say that would be I mostly learned from the videos. I think I learned a lot more from the videos than the books, but the books are very helpful as well.
And I think you also mentioned reading just kind of like general life advice, is another one of the topics you were packing your Kindle with.
Yes, absolutely. I have a lot of just self-help books. one of them being it's called The Shortness of Life by Seneca. But it just sort of talks about how, yeah, like we, a lot of times we waste, you know, time and we waste life because we think it's so going to be so long. You know, just like, you know, you just try to do the most that you can with every day, you know, just try to live every day to the fullest. And then another book was called Die Empty. And that's just sort of the same idea where it's, you know, just give everything you have, you know, so that at the end of your life, like, you know, you don't die with your, you know, your music still in you, you know, you die having given it all you know, all you can. So I read a lot of books like that, you know, Fail Forward, just, you know, dealing with failure and how to, you know, how to deal with setbacks along the way on your journey. The Alchemist, you know, just that was more of like just a book about a guy on a journey and how he deals with different setbacks and different things that go along the way. So those are the top three that just come to mind. But I have a lot more along those lines where it's just basically trying to say, yeah, like, go for your greatness, go for the biggest goals that you can. And that's one of the reasons that I'm doing this business is, like, I could play poker and, you know, make good money and, you know, maybe, you know, 10 years from now, retire and, you know, I'd probably do okay, you know, I probably, you know, could make, you know, good money and have a good retirement. But, you know, I really don't, you know, like, I don't want to retire. Like, I want to do stuff. Like, I want to go for bigger than a goal than that. You know, I want to be a motivational speaker. Like, I want to be a successful business owner. So I'm going for the biggest goals that I can go for instead of just settling for what I know I can achieve, you know. So
that's probably a pretty good note to end on, unless there was anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to.
I mean, I think that's basically it. Yeah, that's, now you know my life story.
I'm glad for it. You know, I think I told you, and I've certainly said on this show before that one of my goals is to kind of use this as an excuse to get to know better people I would like to get to know better. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that.
No, you're welcome. No problem. Thank you for giving the opportunity to be on the show. And no, I've definitely enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to hearing about any feedback anybody has, or I don't know. It's my first time being on a podcast, so yeah.
That's the most important thing. Finish with a plug. What's the name of the digital marketing business again?
Oh yeah, it's called Convertible. Convertable. So instead of IBLE, it's ABLE. So Convertible. So we make websites that are, you know, we make digital campaigns that are able to convert, convertible marketing. So that's the name of the business. It's the website's not up yet, but it will be up by January 1st. So they can check that out then. So thank you.
Nate, did I cut you off there?
Are you on Twitter?
I mean I have a Twitter account.
Didn't you just hear him talking about not wasting time and making the most of his life?
that's funny. I definitely have a Twitter account. I really don't do much with it. I probably will start doing more with it whenever I start doing the, you know, marketing the digital marketing business, I'll be on there, wasting time just a little bit, you can catch me on there whenever I have it. I don't even know my Twitter handle by, you know, because I never really use it, but whenever I have the digital marketing agency, when I have it, the website up and running and things are going there, then I'll I can let you guys know that information.
All right. Well, thanks for investing an hour of your short life with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it. It's been fun.
Yeah, take care.
It's been great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Nate. Yeah, you have a good one, guys. Bye.
Devotion of a car, the light of the fair passage of a bed.